Good morning. I'm your host, Claudia Shambaugh, welcoming you to the April 23rd, 24 edition of Ask a Leader. Today, my guest for the full hour is mixed media artist Suhaila Siadati with an extraordinary solo exhibition at the Orange County Center for Contemporary Art in Santa Ana. Entitled, her exhibit is In Search of the Third Feather of Smurg, Contagious Dictatorship and Fragile Democracy. The remaining days to watch it are this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, ending April 27th, if you're listening to us live. Her most expansive exhibit, yes, this is. She will lead us today through layers of culture, history, and a special media with which she works. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Ask a Leader. My guest for the full hour is Suhaila Siadati, and she's a mixed media artist with an unmissable solo exhibition at the Jewel of a Place, the Orange County Center for Contemporary Art in Santa Ana. It's entitled In Search of the Third Feather of Smurg, Contagious Dictatorship and Fragile Democracy, which closes this Sunday, April 27th. It's going to be one of those programs where it's necessary for the host to tee up some good ones, some good questions, and then get out of the guest way for the fullest learning experience. A little bit about Suhaila. She was born and raised in Iran. Her entire life, she was about creating little sculptures, which led to a career in fiber art, selling her wearable art. 4 years into the revolution in Iran, living in the underground, forbidden early adult life, and after witnessing and experiencing unjust social pressure, she immigrated to Los Angeles as a 25-year-old, moving her life and her artist self here. Owning and running Saffron Grill in Huntington Beach, that's her other day job. Her earliest degree she earned was a business diploma at Farah Pahlavi Technical School in Tehran. Stateside, she completed her Bachelor's of Fine Arts in the Fiber Arts at Cal State Long Beach. She comes to us live from Huntington Beach. She'll talk about all these transitions as seen through her work on exhibit at the Orange County Center for Contemporary Art. Welcome to Ask a Leader, Suhaila Siadati.
Thank you. Thank you for having me in this program.
Thank you. Appreciate. Well, your exhibition is History and Culture through Fibers, Words, and a lot of words, Color, and even Fire. Suhaila, please tell us about your process, layers of media, layers of intention, your testimonials, and your lived experience.
Thank you again. Yeah, well, you know, this exhibition happened when, started about almost 4 years ago that when things happened in Iran, socially, politically, that how, you know, hope all the time. I have this hope in my mind that this, you know, someday, it brings end to this dictatorship, just to let people in the world to know that, you know, people of Iran are not represented by this dictatorial regime. You know, we are different. We are separate. We've been imposed to us, and also my people has been taken as a hostage in the country. And so I think as an artist, we all have this responsibility at some point in our life to bring the question, not the answer, but the question, to lay it out and see where we want to go and how we can watch our social and, you know, political aspect of anywhere we live. Not only, you know, that this, you know, I came to the United States at a very young age. So this is my second home. So it's important for me what is happening here and what is happening there. So therefore, I think even for those folks who say, you know, we are not political people, we're not in politics, and in today's world, if we breathe, if we eat bread and water, we have to be political, because everything is around us as when we do our regular, ordinary day chores, like shopping and buying stuff. We have to know what we're buying, who's doing what. And so in that case, we are actually putting our efforts in search of, you know, watching this democracy, for the next generations and the next generations that are coming up. So having said that, you know, I thought, you know, I wanted to have an art show regarding this situation of Iran. And therefore, in the subtitle, I say, you know, contagious dictatorship and, you know, a fragile democracy, which we are feeling it here as well. And because we think everything happens on the other side of the world has nothing to do with us, but evidently we have seen in so many occasions that it does. It does affect us. So, and then I thought, okay, how in what point of Persian culture, that what we can do, because I wanted to have the hope that I am very hopeful. I know that I see the light at the end of the tunnel because of this internet and technology, that the way it is today, that they get the messages and seeing the light shedding on the truth here and there a lot faster and sooner than before. So therefore, I thought, okay, you know what? What is more important in our culture right now from the literature that I can borrow? And the Seymour is a bird, a big bird like phoenix in Persian literature, that it's in Shahnameh's Ferdowsi, which is one of the great poets of our, you know, literature. And the phoenix actually, Seymour, how the story goes, that when the king gets his wife gives a birth to a son, and the son looks different. The baby looks different. His hair is white. His eyelashes are white. Everything is all white about him, and the king actually thinks this is bad luck to me. So he takes this baby and puts it on a very far, tall mountain. And Seymour, actually, which is the bird, is flying by, and she sees this little baby or something down there. She comes close and sees that this is a baby. So she takes this to her nest as actually food for her chicks. But then she realizes that this is a baby, and she decides to raise him. As time goes by, this guy becomes like very handsome and courageous. And the story of this goes around, and the king wants to see this guy who lives in the mountain. So when he goes there, he recognizes this is his son. And then he asks actually the son to come back to the castle with him. And the son says, no, this is my mom and this is my life. And the bird says, no, you have to go. But then, you know, because he didn't want it to go, and the bird gives him three feathers of her own. And she says, whenever you need me, you're in trouble or you need help, mm-hmm. just burn one of them and then I will be right there. So in this story, actually, his name is Zal. He burns two of these feathers, and one of them never been burned in the story. And so I thought, oh, my God, maybe this is the time. Maybe this is right now, these young kids and, you know, really people of Iran are they have the third feather in their hands. And they're by each one of them coming down, getting killed, getting tortured, they are burning this feather. So therefore, this came to me, and I thought, okay, I'm going to elaborate on this. Therefore, I decided to have exhibition about this, and just to say that no matter what with us guarding the democracy, which is on our shoulder today, every one of us, we have to guard this democracy that we have anywhere in order to be other people's voice. And so that's why this came to my mind.
So I've been exposed to, from the presence of Persian Americans around us. So it's such a rich culture. And I'd like to understand, do most Iranians, are they aware of this Kurdish folktale? Is it something on the consciousness? So when you're tapping into the Simorgh, that people, they're just already charged with meaning here.
Well, the most of people, I can say, they know.
They do know.
Some of us, yeah. For instance, myself, when I was young, because I was against the Shah, I was against the system that was then, which I had no idea what was I, you know, thinking anyway. and I was only 18, 19 when the revolution happened. And so I didn't know, because the Shahnameh, from the name, it says the letters of the king, or the, you know. So that's why I was, like, not paying attention to, because I was thinking this is something about the king. You know, I was not reading it. I could not interpret this to what the story really, really is talking about. Because, you know, when I am disturbed by something that I, ideology of, you know, this is not good, and so I avoid to. But then as this regime came on, which is current, and it's the level of torture and the level of, you know, brutality, it's unbelievable. You cannot imagine even... I cannot even see it in my dream that how deep this is. How could they be this unrooted to do this to their own people, which they're not. I believe they're not from us anyway. They're not from this planet, I believe. Anyway, I thought, you know, that's why we avoid to reading it. Especially if you have some kind of a leftist, mentality when you're young. And so this kind of thing, to be honest, I'm just saying about myself.
Okay.
And so I was not. But then when I came to U.S. and I was a little bit distanced from, you know, that, and being ordinary, you know, person to live and do my, actually be part of this new culture that I am, and working and all that. So I had more time to undo myself and undo my ideas and think about, you know, what really who I am. So I did a lot of self-realization work of studying my own life and my own personality. So I became to this point that, you know, Shahnameh is a great book. And it says in one book, it says all about the culture of Iranian culture. So I really cherish that book now.
Okay.
And I wish that, you know, everybody could in Iran, they do have a lot of courses about reading this, not governmentally, maybe, you know, but they don't want this kind of activities there. But, you know, people, they really cherish this book a lot.
Thank you. For those of you who've just joined us, my guest is Suhaila Ziadati. She's a mixed media artist with an unmissable solo exhibition at the Orange County Center for Contemporary Art in Santa Ana. And you've heard her refer to the features, elements, and the title of the exhibition is In Search of the Third Feather of Simorgh, Contagious Dictatorship and Fragile democracy. So you've exhibited at the center previously. Now you've got this entire venue devoted to your work. I'd like to have you talk about some specific pieces, and listeners, we need not be concerned about spoilers. To be in the presence of this range of work, it's both very personal, it's very moving. So, Suhelo, shall we begin with your loving, respectful tribute to the blogger Sattar Beheshti, who died at the age of 35 under mysterious circumstances in that notorious prison Evin in Tehran. Assertive ride is what you have put together in this tribute to Sattar Beheshti. Tell us about what people will see.
Well, then I heard about Sattar Beheshti, and I thought, okay, he's one more of these, you know, the prices that we are paying for to get rid of this system. And so it didn't really occur to me that the deep, system, the brutality, what they are so, I'm looking for the word, they are so
some fragile. Oppression? An oppression?
They're so fragile.
Okay.
That they even any little voice that scares them. That's how dictatorships are. You know, we think they are big and they are, you know, but they are very, very fragile. Therefore, any little voice that comes from anywhere, they jump to suppress it. So when I read Sattar Beheshti's blog, and I became at point that my God, somebody has to go and, you know, scream, because this is not right. This little, really, 12 blogs that he wrote in a simplest language, and he was just asking some questions, not even attacking the system or anything. So he was just asking simple questions regarding of, you know, why do we see, you know, this little kid, 11-year-old kid, instead of being in school, selling things or working hard 15, 16 hours a day to make a living for his family? And or why did I see an old woman is actually bending in the trash cans and getting her food from there? This is a rich country. And you say God has sent you, because that's what they say. God sent us. We are Shia, we are Muslim. God sent us here to, you know, to be with you and all that. And then he was saying, if God had sent you, then why this is God? Why you, you know, you see this and you don't do anything? And so after 12 blogs that he wrote, they asked him to not to write anymore, but he refused probably. And then they came and they caught him in jail. So 4 days under the torture, they killed him. And this young man, when the mom came for the body, the guy who was tortured him, this is a story that I've heard. I do not know for sure 100%, but I can imagine it might be right, because they said the guy told her that, you know, I got so angry because whatever I was torturing, he was laughing. Whatever I was doing, he was laughing. So I thought, you know, I have to do something. So therefore, I became crazy. I don't know, sometimes artists become crazy. That's fun. But anyway, I started to write all the blogs. And then I thought, okay, how can I display this? So I had some papers, a roll of papers that I took, and I made it. And I said, I'm going to write all of it. And so I wrote all of those with the names of other people that have been killed in the jail and during the protest of 4 years ago. And then all of a sudden I saw, oh my God, this is, I wrote it on butcher paper.
Yes, yes.
So that the concept of this butcher paper, these kids that the names have been wrote, really they have been butchered. So this piece is actually about, I think, 22 feet long, and it's been suspended in the air. And at the end, you see there is a roll. That means this will be continued if we stay silent. This can go on, you know. So, and then, and at some point, some people said that this looks like that flying carpet that takes you to anywhere you want and reach your wishes or whatever, you know. And I thought, oh, that makes such a sense that, you know, these kids are really riding on this carpet.
Yes, which has all that meaning. And I would like to, as you know, we talked about this in preparation. You were so generous to give me such a lovely extra second visit in your presence at the center there. And we talked about Sattar Beheshti's mother. I'm going to say her name, Gohar Eski. Is it Eski?
Eski, yes.
That also Mahsa Amini, who also died at the morality police having beaten her up. She had died then in detention. And we know the Woman Life Freedom Movement that resulted from this, that Mahsa Amini's mother, Mojgan Amini, did I say that right?
Yes.
But both of these mothers are taking up their children's sorts of, they're moving on, they're keeping their children's names on everybody's memories. And we please talk about how motherhood here is pushing through, laboring again. Actually, that's true. It's laboring again to keep their names prominent on Iranian psyches, Iranian diaspora's psyches.
Yeah, it's actually, I think the mothers of this era, in my generation, mothers, really, I always felt for my mom, because even though it is so hard for moms to send their kids away, and, my mom really worked so hard to raise us, to, you know, make, you know, for us to be safe and be a good person, you know, as
yes.
much as she could. And but when I became that young woman that she could have, enjoy this life, because we all know now the young are the life of the house. And but she did everything for me to come over, to be safe, to live. And so, but she went through hell. She told me a few times that, nothing broke my back than sending you away. And she came here when she was living with me, she was telling me. And so I think this is the mother of my generation. Really, they are so courageous that they really went beyond their own love and their own life, and try to do everything that they can to save their own kids, to send them away for a better life. And Sattar Beheshti's mom, which is Gohar Eski, she's a great woman. She's, not only the killing of her son made her stop, and she was actually a religious woman with a scarf all the time on her head. And last year, because of Mahsa Amini, she actually courageously, she went and she took the scarf off.
Wow.
And yeah, and she said, if this is Islam that you are representing, I don't want to be part of it. I don't want to practice this. So therefore, and then she actually wanted to have the blood alive after her son, and the government, the police or whatever was involved, asked her to turn it, take it down. And so she actually, one of Sattar's friend is actually in U.S., and she begged him to have this blog alive in America, so at least people can see. And that's how I could come across of it. Otherwise, if it wasn't because of his mom, I could not even, know about this law, and I couldn't write. I mean, I knew the name, Sasa Beheshti, but I didn't know the blogs about what he was writing. Because if I didn't read the blog, I thought, okay, he probably went there and protest and said, you know, a lot of things. But then when I read the blog, it came to me that this dictatorship is so fragile, so scareful that, you know, it doesn't matter. Any little voice, even if it's, I'm not saying that his voice is little, but I'm just saying, even if you, you know, kind of come, like, you know, for freedom or something, ask questions, you're jeopardizing your life.
So it makes me want to wonder if there's a way that Sattar Beheshti's mother, Gohar Eshki, would ever have a chance to know this project of yours. It's probably very difficult to move images and content around, but do you have in mind some means for communicating this piece of art to her?
Well, I actually tried. I called I sent the image on my Instagram. I actually asked all my family members if you guys knew. However, I on her blog, I mean on her Instagram, on Gohar Eshti's Instagram.
Okay.
I wrote, yeah, she has one. I wrote something about this, but I don't know if she got that.
Yeah, it could have been censored. I mean, I'm sure there's levers and access to do that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yes.
I hope that she will see that, because the reason is not because I just want to say I did something.
No.
I want her to know it's because it doesn't matter how literate you are, doesn't matter what kind of a degree you are. She probably is just a, you know, very simple lady, but your voice counts. When you do something like that, it comes across, and some other people will hear and take a step because of what you did. And so I hope that this happens, you know, all the mothers who lost their loved ones, you know, at least can do something, which they are doing. But the thing is, this regime is so, brutal that, you know, it kills everything. So
speaking of mothers, your own mother is the basis of Secrets at Tea Time, which people can see as they enter, look, sweep to the right, and there is that lovely piece. So bring up the backstory of what Secrets at Tea Time was set in, when that was taking place.
Well, when I brought up with very dysfunctional family. I was 3 months old when my mom and dad divorced, and we went through turmoil of, you know, things that happened. And when my mom, after my mom died, I really, most of the time I'm thinking about her and the things that she was telling me. I was trying to understand it now, because back then I was so young and I was so busy with the life outside of the house. Anyhow, Secret at Tea Time happened when I started. The way I work, actually, I don't have anything in mind or plan.
The layers.
We're
starting at the beginning layer, right?
Layer. I have no idea. I just start. And every day that I come to continue the work, still I don't know. I'm just like, whatever I feel, I do. You know, I like to, you know, I have some image in my mind, but none of the work that I have been done, it comes near to that image that I had in mind. Just totally takes the life of its own. So I started this, but the most part of the work, I was thinking about my mom, and I was really missing her. And so I just drew one line, and I thought, okay, this line, this is my mom. And I had no idea that, you know, how this becomes what it is right now, how it became. And so I actually started to put the circles and play with circles and this line, and you know, and did some doodling, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, with the pencil. And then after, you know, I love the tea. I am a tea drinker. And then most of the Iranians, they are tea drinkers mm-hmm. as well, especially back home. And so I use a lot of tea, recycled tea leaves that I use at the restaurant. I take them, the old ones, and I dry them, and I put them in some of my work. Mm-hmm. And that piece actually, after I finished the piece, I was like, why did I do this? Why? How it became that? Because I never, prior to the work, I never, you know, decorate or do anything. Not that that was a decoration, but I was thinking about that. So, and then I went back to my feelings. I said, what was I feeling when I created this? Because I have to understand myself to begin with. So I went back and I was thinking, oh, my God, I was thinking about my mom. I was remembering the memories of my mom, that we were sitting in, you know, what is it? Every day my mom would have like a tea samovar, we call it, is a tea maker, like a coffee pot.
Yes, the samovar. Yes.
Samovar. So every day she would put the samovar out, and all the people, friends, the rooms that they were tenants, they would come to her and sit and talk to her and say, oh my God, my husband last night did this, or my husband is cheating on me, or my husband this, or my son this. So she was listening to all of these stories, to the point that one of them, because she couldn't have baby and her marriage was in a turmoil. So my mom said, I will take you to any doctor. So I'm not going to stop until you become pregnant. So this is just to the extent that she would go on with them. And so, and then at the end, when they were drinking tea, the tea, teacup, with a saucer. We use a lot of saucers on the teacup. Mm-hmm. And so she would ask me to come and wash the teacup. So I was like cussing at these people because I was young. And then you guys come here and drink the tea and I have to wash it. And then I was playing with this teacup. When I was taking it from the away from the saucer, I would see the circle mm-hmm. that bubbles or it pops all of a sudden, and I was playing with it, and I noticed that when I was working on this piece, I was remembering this memory of my mom being there, and how I was, you know, playing with this tea cups and saucers. So that's how unconsciously I was just like being in that world, and that's what it came out of it.
That is so lovely.
And you know, just to add this, because
yes.
A lot of important decisions made through drinking tea. So I was wondering when I was, you know, that how many girls at the young age, this, you know, parents decided to give it to this guy or to do this, to do that, to move from here. All these important decisions have been made through, you know, just drinking tea. So this came to, you know, very important.
Fundamental, fundamental. For those who've just joined us, my guest is Suhaila Siadati. She's a mixed media artist, and we have remaining an opportunity at the Orange County Center for Contemporary Art in Santa Ana. The remaining exhibition times are this Friday, April 25th, Saturday, April 26th, Sunday, April 27th, to see the exhibition entitled In Search of the Third Feather of Simurgh, Contagious Dictatorship.
Actually, it's on this Saturday. So no, Sunday is not. Sunday is the show comes down. Just
it's coming down
sure.
Only Saturday and Friday, Saturday. Oh, this is. Oh,
yeah. It's
okay,
only Friday and Saturday.
Okay.
Sorry, honey.
Thank you. Thank you. We need that. So, and I'll change a whole lot of notices there. But so the through part throws me. So we're going to move that motif of those circles into then a different chamber of the center. The coronavirus painting, Reclaimed Trajectory, is in conversation with Genomics of Galaxy. It's a molecular to a cosmos level kind of conversation going on between those pieces. We've got a few other pieces to talk about, but if there's a way you can bring up what that conversation is saying, and they're talking over the butcher paper that's hanging in the middle, but there is a conversation going on between those orbs that you have on canvas.
Yeah, I was, these two pieces actually was from the last exhibition that I had. It was based on Corona period or what is the pandemic. And, you know, during when the pandemic started, as we all experienced, it was very down and hard. And, you know, I don't know, for me, it was like, for 3-4 days, I was crying because the restaurant is located on a street that is very busy, Beach Boulevard. And the life of Beach Boulevard all of a sudden stopped. And the town became like a ghost. And, you know, I could have closed, but I decided to be open. So I went even for 3 hours a day. I just wanted to be in the heart of this feelings that to see what it does to me, because I could not stay at home. And so at the restaurant, I felt like, oh my God, what is this? So I had my studio in Costa Mesa. So I went to my studio afterwards and start working, which this studio place had like 16 artist studios. And none of them were there. So I actually decided to go. I was like, I can't stand this. So I went there, and I was starting on this, actually, the trajectory, reclaim trajectory was started. And I was just start sewing like crazy. And with sewing, I was keep crying, pouring, because I don't know why I was doing that. But it was just, I wanted to be in the middle of this and just don't care about anything, and just do something. I thought, you know, it brings all of these, you know, pain out. And so I started, and I thought, during this piece took about 8 months to make, because it's very long, and the piece itself actually was a lot longer, but by sewing and distressing, I made it like a crumble. So that's why, you know, you see it's that long, but it was almost twice as much to begin with. So as I went on, I studied about coronavirus, and I saw the virus. It's a circle. It's a beautiful circle with these things that are poking out. And I was like, my goodness, how could this circle kill all these people and you know, paralyze our life, everybody around the world? Nobody can do anything about it. And so I thought, oh God, planet is circles, this is circles, our life is circles. So the circle is, so actually I thought, okay, this will pass too, because it is relating to all the circles that is around the world, you know, in the universe. So it gave me that comfort that this will pass. So I became one with the piece, and I made it, and then I decided to have exhibition based on this feeling as a circle.
And it's in conversation with, you could say it's the polar other end, the genomics of galaxy on the other wall.
Yeah, genomics of galaxy. Actually, what I did, I was so crazy. I started to burning the canvas first. This was loose canvas. I just throw it in the fire at each end, and I just wanted to see what it comes, and then I worked with it from there.
Okay.
So I started to do that, and I you know, made paint of the, it's a big piece, and painted, and did I don't just like to start with one thing and finish. And I like to do layers of different media that, you know, I just, you know, to actually bring what is inside of me What is the pain? What is the joy mm-hmm. that I feel? And I think of, you know, if you see a lot of bumps, you know, my teeth is very textural.
Yes.
That's how my, you know, my personality is. That I, you know, I do not, I'm not a, I always wanted to be this soft and nice and, you know, peaceful girl, but I'm never. So that's why you see all of these textures around the piece everywhere that I make something. You will see that, you know, what you call it, cracks and, you know, because that's how I am.
Well, let's move into then a different medium, but every bit the multi-textural and rich sort of story to tell. The figures, Suhaila, that you built to commemorate those killed for protesting or aiding protesters. As you talk about them, how well known are those figures that you're that you have in these kind of these? They're figures. They're three-dimensional figures on stands. Tell us how well known each of those individuals might be known around Iran.
Yeah, they pretty much they know. You know, first of all, to tell you about this, these
yes.
The pieces. It's just that I felt that as if these just say, you know, you hear this got killed, that got injured, there's a skull in the prison, it just becomes a story. It just, you know, you hear it, and then you go back to your life. You go back to what you have to do. And probably forget about what you heard here. So I thought that I wanted to visualize the pain, the depth of this killing, torturing that, you know, might, you know, just shake people to say, you know what, this is what is happening. It's not story. This is the reality. Death can come here easily without us even, you know, think about it. So therefore, I decided to bring these images to life. And I thought, okay, you know what? I need to do, I had a bunch of, you know, these are the gowns that I collected. The gowns that when they are actually doing like maybe the nurse or the caretakers are doing some at the hospital or clinics giving like chemo or something, but they don't want to protect themselves. They put on, it's a plastic kind of made.
Like a single use gown. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I took those and I made like one of them, which her name is, one of them is like
the doctor. Are you thinking of
the doctor? One of them is doctor. Actually, the doctor is the one who took step. Because people in the protest, when they were injured, they didn't go to hospital because the hospital's government will come and take them to the jail. So therefore, they went to their home. Their friends took them to their houses and start treating them in the house. So this doctor, she would go to their houses and sneak in there and do the treatments to help them. And then the government, they noticed, and then they came and they captured her and took her to jail and killed her. And so, therefore, I was like, you know, what was her, you know, she actually, at the time that she was graduated, she promised, she raised her hand, and she said, I will treat anybody, anywhere, with any religion or anything. She swore that I will take care of that. And then, you know, and she's just doing her job and not even doing anything against the system. And then the other girl that she was just engaged and they killed her. And then she actually, I thought, okay, you know what, I'm going to make a wedding gown for her.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a wedding gown for her. And the other one is all the Too Much Salehi, which is a famous rapper that he's in jail right now. And so I made that jacket for him and all the prison images on that. So the people that are in the prison. And then the little kid.
Yes, him.
Him, his name is Kion Pilpalak. It's just that he was driving with his family, and apparently they were driving to the direction that the protest going on. And I'm not sure if they were going to the protest or they were just driving. And then all of a sudden the police caught him and said, you know, go around, not going this way. So the kid tells his dad, "Dad, please listen to police. They want good for us. So make a U-turn." So the dad makes U-turn, and then all of a sudden the police, with the gun, starts shooting at them. And the kid dies right away, and the dad got paralyzed from the waist down. And so because the mom knew that this happened before, that the kid, if they take the body, they will not give it to the parents. So that's why the mom took the body and ran to her house, and she kept the body at her sight all night. And she would go around and ask for ice to put on the body to stay cool so she can bury it wherever she wants the next day. So that's why I just wanted to say that this is the deepest you can go. I mean, this is how it's just like, you know, sometimes you hear somebody killed somebody. Yeah, that's just the killing. But this is beyond that, you know. I mean, how could you make people to go to take these steps to just go around and ask for ice for your kid, 9-year-old kid body? I mean, I don't know. I'm just like, you know, I just wanted to show this.
It is really, it's a really striking work there in the front gallery, actually. So I'm not going to get to ask about everything, but I want to give you a chance, though, to talk about the folks need to look in the back room, this darkened gallery space, with a kinetic sort of mixed media piece that you've done. Tell us what you can in just a few minutes, and will it also be installed other places? I mean, it fits, you build it to fit that kind of space, but tell us about that kinetic mixed media piece.
Well, actually, that is the main piece for this exhibition.
Yes.
It is the feather. And the feathers that has the images,
yes,
of these kids on. And the reason I went ahead and I wanted to have this movement to it, it's just I wanted to show that they're not dead. They're alive. There is a life there. And they are active. And they're coming back. They're going to be, you know, the freedom is going to come to us. So I just wanted to show in this dark room, mm-hmm, that you go there and feel this, even the duality of the life, the sadness of this young kid being killed, and also the hopeful part that is they are moving, they are coming, they are here. So that's why my main goal was for this exhibition.
So the interview here is the point is to make sure everybody goes in the back. It's not obvious, but it's central. So that's a major feature there.
Yeah,
so,
you would hear the sound because the sometimes the work, you do half of the job of creating, mm-hmm, and then the piece itself creates the other half.
Yes, yes.
This piece, when I started, I didn't know about the sound. But actually, when I put it together in the gallery, because I didn't know what it was, I didn't have a space to put them together. But I put it there, and the noise of this motor that makes these feathers go up and down, it's like execution kind of sound or something, this industrial,
yes,
kind of sound with the life sound, you know, with the life images. It actually completed the piece.
Fully.
That,
and
you
it's
know,
immersive in that way. I so am so interested in giving the chance. You can't tell us about any sort of premature negotiations, but you're for those people who can't make it Friday or Saturday of this week, April 25th, 26th. Can you tell us briefly, just in a half a minute, anything you can about the themes and the venue that you may have for people to see your work in L.A.?
Well, the only thing is I don't know as we speak right
okay.
now.
Well, I'll have to announce that.
I will let you know, okay. And then you can just do your part.
Okay. I will definitely do my part. Well, I want to. It's been congratulations for one thing here. I'm going to hear we get there's Mr. Hussein Umumi in the background there to send you out. Well, congratulations on a marvel of an exhibition. It fits the times, the space, and the mood, and I highly recommend this. Everybody already has that sense. Thank you so much for your time, Suhaila.
Thank you, Claudia. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
I really cherish this. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you. My guest was Suhaila Siadati, and she's a mixed media artist with an unmissable solo exhibition, as I've said. It's the jewel of a place, too, at the Orange County Center for Contemporary Art in Santa Ana, in search of the third feather of Seymour, Contagious Dictatorship and Fragile Democracy. On view now, Friday and Saturday of this week. It's at 117 North Sycamore Street, Santa Ana. The details are available at the OCCCA.org. That's my wrap. Next week, we've got some goodies from South Coast Rep. The playwright of Galilee 34, Eleanor Burgess, will be my featured guest. Talk with you next week. Thank you, everyone, for listening.